From unsolved mysteries to unexplained phenomena, from comedy gold to relationship fails, Amazon Music's got the most ad-free top podcasts, included with Prime. Download the Amazon Music app today.
Everybody, it is a Wednesday. That means only one thing. It's time now for Supernatural News and Parashare on Darkness Radio, of course. I'm your host, Tim Dennis. Our co-host for today is lovely. She's intelligent. She's witty. She's very funny. And she's written a hell of a lot more books than I'll ever write in my lifetime. Ladies and gentlemen, here she is, returning for a second straight day, Jessica Freeberg. Hi, Jessica.
Hey, I'm back.
You're back. Hi, Beck.
I don't know. Hi.
Just figured I'd throw that in there. Boy, have we got a big show today, Jess. We have got some interesting alien news today. Of course, we've got Nightmare Fuel. We always have that every week.
Yeah, of course.
And by gosh, we've got interesting stories about, you remember MH370, the plane that disappeared and was never found?
Yes.
They believe they have an answer as to what happened with that plane.
Ooh, I'm excited to hear.
Yeah. We also have a story today about a self-professed time traveler who's offering predictions of the future. I know it seems like we have one every week. but this is an unusual time traveler, followed by a story about intelligent entities visiting us from a higher dimension. There's actually I had brain freeze there. Again, COVID brain. T.K. Randall has an article out there surmising that maybe we have intelligent entities from another dimension visiting us. It's an interesting article. We'll read that today and get the scoop on that as well. A couple of ghost stories as well. And we do have a Parashare story if we have time to get around to it today. So all that and more on today's show. How do you like them apples?
Sounds like a good one. I can't wait.
There you go. Let's jump into it right away. There is a article out there that says there's a new search aiming to find evidence of aliens beyond our galaxy. This sounds like a story we've heard probably every week, too, for the last couple of years.
Sounds familiar.
That's right. A major new collaborative effort has been launched in the hope of looking further afield for aliens than ever before. The new endeavor, which is a collaboration involving the SETI Institute, the Berkeley SETI Research Center, and the International Center for Radio Astronomy Research, involves using the Murchison Wide Field Array in rural Australia to look for alien technosignatures in deep space. Thanks to the observatory's large field of view, it is possible to observe 2,800 distant galaxies in a single observation, widening the search for alien life well beyond anything attempted before. This work represents a significant step forward in our efforts to detect signals from advanced extraterrestrial civilizations, said SETI's Dr. Chinua Tremblay, who is co-leading the study. The large field of view and low frequency range of the MWA makes it an ideal tool for this kind of research, and the limits we set will guide future studies. According to SETI, in order for an alien civilization to be advanced enough to send a message from another galaxy that we could pick up here on Earth, they would need to have mastered the technology needed to harness power from nearby stars. Sadly, the first search conducted as part of this new collaboration failed to find any sign of alien signals. But what has been learned during the process will prove beneficial moving forward. While this first study did not find any technosignatures or signs of alien technology, it provides insights that will help focus future searches, SETI wrote in a press release. It shows how important it is to keep exploring different radio frequencies and using the unique capabilities of telescopes like the MWA. So with that, Jess, is the thought of, are we current with technologies when it comes to finding aliens, or are we using past technologies? They're talking about using radio waves, but we read a story a couple of weeks ago talking about how maybe we need to be using quantum technologies and using more current technologies, because maybe we're in the past too much with technology trying to communicate with aliens. Do you think we're using current enough technology?
I feel like no matter what we do, we're always going to be behind the eight ball when it comes to aliens. They clearly know more than us. Look at how they get around when we see their aircrafts and they have no sound and they shoot off super fast and just disappear. We don't have that.
Yeah, that's true. It kind of feels like we're the Wright brothers compared to them, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, I don't think we're quite as advanced as they are, but I don't know. It kind of feels like we're using the telegraph and they're using cell phones. We're ever quite in their ballpark, but
we're never going to catch up either. They're just smarter than us.
I think so. Well,
that's okay.
The head of India's space program came out this past week and said that aliens definitely exist. Well, thank you, Captain Obvious. Can we have another? Sridhara Samanth is his name, spoke out on the topic of extraterrestrial life during a recent podcast interview. It's not just NASA that's looking for signs of alien life. The space agencies of many other countries, including India, which has enjoyed considerable success on its own missions in recent years, are also hoping to find evidence to suggest that we are not alone in the universe. During a recent podcast, Sridhara Samanth, Samanath is what it is. The head of the Indian Space Research Organization said that he was confident that there is alien life out there. He says, absolutely, without a doubt. He told that to host Ranveer Alabadia. My conscience tells me yes, although I have no proof. As the chairman of ISRO, I am telling you this. There are definitely aliens out there in the universe. Aliens means living systems and cultures in other parts of the universe. If they're ahead in technology by just 1,000 years or 10,000 years, they would definitely visit us. According to Samanath, the Earth may look like a zoo to any inquisitive extraterrestrial visitors. That said, he is not necessarily optimistic about meeting them. Biology is such that all life forms on Earth are connected in some way. Plants, bacteria, fish, animals, and humans, we're all evolved from a common ancestor, he said. But if something evolved on another planet, it may have developed an entirely different way. It may not have the same genomic structure or protein structure, which can be extremely dangerous. When two life forms come into contact, one has to dominate the other. This is the nature of life. One will not allow the other to survive. It must surpass and destroy the other. Actually, that's a really good point.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't know that. He does come up with a very good point. He also says, unless these aliens become aware of this and realize that we are different, choosing to remain disconnected in terms of our bodies or chemistry, it will be catastrophic. I've never thought it would be a good meeting either if we met up with aliens. I always thought that, you know, they would look at it. We would look at them as inferior. They would look at us as inferior. And
yeah, probably going to look at us as inferior, right. And we're going to look at them as scary.
Right. And there would be some sort of clash that it wouldn't necessarily be a good meeting. You know, it wouldn't be a peaceful meeting. There would be fear.
I don't think so. It would probably be our fault too, that it wasn't peaceful, because we tend to like to attack or kill things that we don't understand.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Our next story has to do with the Pentagon's UFO office. As they have announced that they have a new director, the All Domain Anomaly Resolution Office, or ARRO, which investigates UFOs, is now under new management. Established back in 2022 as a successor to the Pentagon's Unidentified Aerial Phenomena Task Force, or UAPTF, ARRO, or All Domain Anomaly Resolution Office, has been headed up by physicist Sean Kirkpatrick, who stepped down in December of 2023, leaving Tim Phillips as interim director. Now, in an official press release, the Department of Defense has announced that the new permanent director of ARRO moving forward will be Dr. John T. Kozlowski, who is a scientist with extensive experience in several relevant fields, including quantum optics and crypto mathematics. John possesses the unique set of scientific and technical skills, policy knowledge, and proven leadership experience required to enhance AARO's efforts to research and explain unidentified anomalous phenomena to the Department, Congress, and the American people, said Deputy Secretary of Defense Kathleen Hicks. The press release also provided a link to Kozlowski's biography, which adds, prior to this appointment as director of AARO, Dr. Kozlowski held technical and leadership positions within the Research Directorate of the National Security Agency. Interesting. In that capacity, he led advanced mission-oriented research in the fields of networking and computing and served as a subject matter expert in the area of free space optics, advising various DOD agencies. In other words, he's more qualified for the role. It will be interesting to see what information comes out of AARO over the next few years under his leadership. So a guy who's a little more qualified when it comes to science, a guy who's a little more qualified when it comes to the Department of Defense, stepping in at AARO.
He sounds like a smart fella.
He does, but he also sounds like he might know his way around a denial.
That's probably like one of the prerequisites of the job.
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder if they're going to become less forthcoming when it comes to answers out of AARO. So we'll see. We'll see. Sean Kirkpatrick is pretty good about denying things, but we'll see how good Dr. Kozlowski really is. We'll move on here. A woman from Missouri claims to have regular encounters with alien visitors. Lily Nova describes herself as a starseed and spotted her first UFO back during the pandemic. Lily, who hails from St. Louis, Missouri, had taken up astrophotography as a hobby during the lockdown when she first started seeing unexplained objects in the skies above her home. She says, "My first encounter with aliens and UFOs was very intense." She said, "I went outside for some fresh air one night and I immediately locked eyes with bright light hovering over the neighborhood," she said. "I started investigating and realized it was a UFO. Seconds later, I looked away briefly, and when I looked back, there was a second craft that was much closer. I could actually see a triangular shape of the craft. The UFOs did some impressive maneuvers to show me that it wasn't a regular craft before they disappeared above me." Before long, she was reporting similar encounters on a daily basis. "During my encounters, I've also been able to see what the beings look like," she said. "One of the first beings I saw was a girl with light blue skin. She had no hair, but she was very beautiful. She was wearing a skin-tight gray suit, and I saw her shipmates standing behind her in the same uniform." According to Lily, such encounters tend to occur when she is in a very relaxed state, suggesting they may be more metaphysical or spiritual in nature. "They are such beautiful and positive experiences. Sometimes I even bawl my eyes out crying while it's happening," she said. "I believe that they come to me because I believe in them. I am open-minded and I am welcoming towards them." While her experiences have certainly invited a fair amount of skepticism, Lily has also gained quite a fan following online and now maintains a successful YouTube channel. They also have a link in this story having to do with her YouTube channel where you can follow her adventures. I tell you what, I'll post this in the description of the program so you can read the story, click on it, and follow her on YouTube and check out some of her stories as well. So there you go. Our final story before break has to do with researchers detecting some quote-unquote hidden activity beneath the lunar surface on the far side of the moon. According to University of Hong Kong researchers, they've identified signs of hidden magmatism, not magnetism, but magmatism as in volcano activity, beneath the surface of the Chang'e 6 lunar landing site on the far side of the moon, shedding new light on the celestial body's geologic history. This discovery could have profound implications for our knowledge of the moon's geology, inner workings, and evolution over billions of years. While the findings have significant scientific potential, the discovery also carries geopolitical implications in the ongoing space race between the U.S. and China. The results of this research set a significant geological framework to study plutonic rocks in the Chang'e 6 samples, especially MG Suite rocks. head of China's lunar sample studies from the Institute of Geology and Geophysics, and study author Dr. Jianhua Li said in a statement, "Their petrogenesis and timing are unclear, and this research would dramatically help to understand their origin mechanism. Magmatism, a geological process involving the movement and solidification of molten rock or magma beneath planets' crusts, plays a crucial role in shaping planetary surfaces. Volcanism, which has nothing to do with the Winter Carnival, Jess, I assure you. Volcanism is the visible result of magmatism and is the main process responsible for forming mountains. The moon was thought to have cooled down significantly since its formation, and it was not expected to exhibit any significant magmatic activity, especially not in areas where the surface appears undisturbed. However, these new findings suggest otherwise." Describing the analysis of lunar samples taken from the South Pole, Aiken Spa Basin, researchers wrote, "We found abundant evidence for the broad distribution of shallow crustal intrusions in Spa, suggesting extensive magmatic activities at depth in Spa. This surprising revelation reveals clear signs of magmatic activity in an area once believed to be geologically inactive. The findings could open up new field of study focused on the moon's thermal and magmatic history. Researchers referred to the process as hidden magmatism, or magmatic processes that occur beneath a planetary surface but do not produce obvious surface features such as volcanic craters or lava flows. Hidden magmatism can occur when magma cools and solidifies deep underground, leaving no visible evidence on the surface. On Earth, hidden magmatism is often detected through seismic activity, but on the moon, where seismic activity is minimal, its discovery requires more indirect methods." In a study published in the Astrophysical Journal Letters, researchers described how remote sensing data and advanced imaging techniques were used to analyze the moon's subsurface near the Chang'e 6's site. By examining variations in the data, scientists could infer the presence of dense material beneath the surface consistent with magmatic deposits. The moon's surface, heavily scarred by impact craters and meteorites, has been long considered geologically dormant. However, this new evidence suggests that there may be still molten or partially molten rock beneath the surface. So there you go. Interesting stuff.
Yeah, very interesting.
So the moon, many years ago, may have been quite active.
I like it.
There you go.
I think we can move there, sounds like.
Maybe. I mean, there may be some water up there. There's a molten core. You can't drill too deep, otherwise you're going to get burned.
A lot of stuff going on.
So when we come back, Jess, MIT researchers are saying that AI is inherently sociopathic.
I believe that. That makes sense.
Yeah. But there could be a good side to it. We'll tell you what that good side is to AI. There's always a silver lining, right? Supposedly.
Theoretically.
A miracle has been found as an exhumed nun's body shows no sign of decomposition.
Ooh, that's amazing.
Yeah, we'll tell you about that story when we come back. Are we being visited by intelligent entities from a higher dimension? We'll check into that story when we come back. A self-professed time traveler offers prediction of the future. We've got a parachute story today. We'll jump into that as well. And our final story today, you know, just there's been stories over the years about, are dolphins something more than what they appear? They're not just a little sea mammal. Maybe they're gray aliens.
Right.
Well, I think I may have found a story from a listener that may suggest they're also sex perverts.
Ooh.
We'll end today's story by telling you why I think dolphins are gray alien sex perverts.
It's going to be good.
Yeah, that's how we'll end today's show. Our end today is not safe for work. So there you go. That's all coming up on the big program today. It's Supernatural News and Parish here on a Wednesday, your hump day with Tim Dennis and Jessica Freeberg. When we come back, all that and much, much more right here on Darkness Radio.
Ready to ride the waves or hit the road for less? Refinance your boat or motorcycle loan with CME and let them try to beat your rate by 1.5% APR. Enjoy no payments for 90 days and rates as low as 6.25% APR. It's never been easier to lower your rate and free up cash. So make the smart move. Refinance with CME today. Terms and conditions apply. Minimum floor rate of 6.25% APR. Federally insured by NCUA. Visit CMEFCU.org. For additional details.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Save big money on your roofing project at Menards with Owens Corning Shingles. Your roof is the first line of defense against the elements and enhances the appearance of your home's exterior. Owens Corning Duration Shingles offer ultimate protection and impressive curb appeal. Choose from 24 colors of Owens Corning Duration Shingles and transform your home today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Dutch Boy's DuraFighter is an interior paint and primer in one with a tough-lasting formula. It provides great scrub resistance and durability with remarkable hide and a smooth finish. Save big on Dutch Boy's DuraFighter paint at Menards and start your next project today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week.
Save big money at Menards.
Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Dutch Boy's DuraFighter is an interior paint and primer in one with a tough-lasting formula. It provides great scrub resistance and durability with remarkable hide and a smooth finish. Save big on Dutch Boy's DuraFighter paint at Menards and start your next project today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week.
Save big money at Menards.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Welcome back to the Best in Paranormal Podcasting. This is Darkness Radio on a Wednesday. Supernatural News and Parish Air with Tim Dennis and Jessica Freeberg. Jess, we're getting to our favorite time of year. We're past Labor Day. State Fair's over. Minnesota State Fair. I know it doesn't apply to most of our audience, but when Labor Day passes, the temperature drops in Minnesota right off the table, right?
Yeah. It's really nice right now.
It really
bonfire weather.
Oh my gosh. You know, I have in the backyard, I've got this flame table that I bought a couple years ago.
Yeah.
So I like to crank it up, you know, especially in the afternoon, evenings. Crank up the flame table, have myself a little cigar in the backyard. I only do this a couple of times a year. It's not like I'm a chain smoker or anything. But on the weekends, I like to have a cigar, you know, maybe once a month. And every once in a while, you get the chippers in the backyard. They like to come out in the backyard. So you get a chipper in the backyard. You got a little cigar going. Oh my gosh, and then you get the fall going. I used to have this hammock that I put in the backyard. So every once in a while, you could get that hammock going. If you get the flame table going, the hammock, and you're in the hammock in the nice, cool weather. Sometimes you can get a nice nap back there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Looking up at the clouds. Sometimes you get a little sunshine, that little mix of the sunshine and the cool weather, right? The leaves blowing. You know how it's just perfect, that perfect temperature? You know, maybe 65, 70 degrees. That nice coolness. Maybe have a nice warm beverage with you, whether it be your coffee or your cocoa or your apple cider. Maybe have a nice book out with you. Just that perfect fall day and, you know, it's...
Ah, they did it again!
Jess. I was in my perfect fall happy place. Oh, I'll get there during the week. They can't ruin it when I'm actually in it. Oh boy. Okay, so a law passed on the controversial use of AI to bring back dead actors after the Superman fiasco. I know you may be saying, what Superman fiasco? I'll tell you all about it. A new law aims to clamp down on using AI to bring back actors from the dead. Under the new law, film studios will now need permission from the deceased star's estate to recreate their likenesses for the silver screen and other platforms. This comes as the family of Superman actor Christopher Reeves were furious after Warner Brothers recreated the former superhero for a cameo in the 2023 movie The Flash without asking permission. Did you see The Flash, by the way?
I did not, but no, they can't do that. That's
I did.
So wrong.
It was kind of a, I gotta tell you, the scene in the movie is a little heartwarming, heart-touching, but they also recreated Nicolas Cage as Superman, which is supposed to be, it never made it to the movies, right?
Right.
So the way they do it is, you know, spoiler alert, by the way, if you haven't seen The Flash, you can see it on HBO 10 times a day. But The Flash, the end of the movie, is kind of running back through time, and he's running back. He manages to run so fast that he runs through a portal, right?
Right.
And all these different timelines are converging at the same time in order to defeat the reverse Flash, or whatever you want to call him. The guy who's the main enemy in the movie, right? And as he's doing this, you see all these different heroes from these different timelines, right? And one of the timelines, the heroes from the timeline, is the Christopher Reeve Superman. And it's kind of cool because he's popping through. You're kind of seeing them in like an energy field. Right. So it's kind of like their face is popping through the energy field. Right. So it's not like they're appearing in person. So it's not like a full model of AI. Right. So it's kind of like their face is popping through the energy field.
Yeah. I like the idea. It sounds really cool, but you can't do that without permission.
Yeah, I get that. But see, here's the kicker. And before we get to the story, the kicker is a lot of times what actors don't realize is when they sign on to do a lot of these movies, especially these old contracts, the old studio contracts, they're signing on for their likeness to be used in marketing and in films and future projects.
Okay.
In marketing, in commercials, in licensing for toys and other things. So that law allows them to use Christopher Reeve in future movies.
Yes.
It's very loose. It's a very loose interpretation. But it allows them to do a quick cameo in something like The Flash. I know it's sketchy. It's very sketchy. The law created by the California Senate, the new one, applies to those who want to use artificial likenesses to a dead actor in films, TV shows, video games, and other media. The clampdown is likely to spread across the U.S. and potentially globally once the U.S. state's governor, Gavin Newsom, passes the law, according to The Sun. Film studios currently don't need permission from estates to use AI to replicate performers, although it is often sought. The new bill would make this permission essential. The Movie Actors Union, the Screen Actors Guild, said this is another win in our ongoing strategy of enhancing performer protections in a world of generative artificial intelligence. British actor Ian Holm, who died in 2020, was recreated for a role as an android in Alien Romulus, which iconic American actor James Dean, who died in 1955 in a car accident, was cast in Back to Eden in 2023. Fast and Furious 7 used artificial intelligence to put Paul Walker's face on his brother Cody's body and complete the actor's remaining scenes after Paul died in a fireball car crash in 2013. Carrie Fisher was also resurrected thanks to tech, so she could feature in Star Wars Episode 9, The Rise of Skywalker. This was done with her brother's approval. The children of Christopher Reeve, who died in 2004 as a result of a suspected adverse reaction to a drug, said they had no involvement in this 2023 cameo, nor had any of them watched the film in an interview with Variety. His son Will added that his dad would choose Remains of the Day as the film he was most proud of over Superman if he was still alive, which is interesting. I had no idea. But yeah, he was more partial to that movie than he was Superman. So there you go. Meanwhile, it turns out that MIT researchers say that AI is inherently sociopathic, but that it can be trained to give ethical financial advice.
I don't know about that.
So it can teach you how to pinch a penny and do it ethically. It's just a sociopath. It can't determine right from wrong. Aronson Hardy, a wealth manager in Los Angeles, uses artificial intelligence daily. Almost every single meeting I have with a client, I utilize an AI summarizer that gives me notes, gives me follow-ups, gives me to-dos, Hardy said. His employer, Savvy Wealth, is a tech startup focused on providing AI innovations to its growing roster of financial advisors and high net worth clients. Hardy said AI tools regularly save his team hours on data entry, portfolio monitoring, and other back office tasks, giving him more time to meet with clients. He's not alone. A report that the data analytics firm Escalent shared with Business Insider said that nearly 40% of financial advisors use generative AI tools on the job, primarily to boost productivity, generate content, and market to or prospect new clients. Soon, generative AI may have the power to fulfill a financial advisor's most important role, which is giving people trustworthy money advice. While the uptake of ChatGPT and other large language models has been swift across industries, including fashion and marketing, financial services have hit regulatory roadblocks. But MIT researchers believe there's a clear path to training AI models as subject matter experts that ethically tailor financial advice to an individual's circumstances, instead of responding to "how should I invest" with generic advice and a push to seek professional help. An AI chatbot could become the financial advisor itself. We're on our way to that holy grail, said Andrew Lowe, a professor of finance at the MIT Sloan School of Management, the director of the Laboratory for Financial Engineering. We think we're about 2 or 3 years away before we can demonstrate a piece of software that by SEC regulatory guidelines will satisfy fiduciary duty. Fiduciary duty, by the way, refers to the set of legal responsibilities that implore financial and investment advisors to act with the highest degree of care when handling a client's money. It's the gold standard in financial planning, and it has so far proved difficult to replicate in direct-to-consumer AI tools. Financial advisors often develop client recommendations through a behavioral financial lens, as research suggests that people don't always make rational or unbiased financial decisions, but are error-prone and emotionally driven. An average investor, for instance, might panic when the stock market plummets and decide to sell their stake in a mutual fund rather than wait for the market to recover, as it almost always does. Knee-jerk reactions like this can often be avoided or corrected under the guidance of a skilled financial advisor, whom the investor trusts. Lowe said that trust can be developed in part through empathy and small talk. When you start talking to somebody, almost immediately you develop feelings for that person, Lowe said. That's the kind of process that needs to happen with large language models. We need to develop an ability to interact with humans, not just on an intellectual level, but on an emotional one. But the glaring problem with publicly available AI tools is that they're inherently sociopathic, Lowe and his co-author wrote in a research report exploring the challenges of widespread adoption of AI-powered financial advice. This sociopathy seems to cause the characteristic glibness of LLM output, and LLM can easily argue both sides of an argument because neither side has weight to it, they wrote. It may be able to role-play as a financial advisor by relying on its training data, but the AI needs to have a deeper understanding of a client's state of mind to build trust. One way to accomplish this is by requiring a machine to ask the user simple questions, starting with, "How are you doing?" before dispensing personalized financial advice. In addition to analyzing the text, advanced AI may be able to solicit audio or video from the user to identify emotional cues such as stress or fear in their voice or facial expressions, Lowe said. Think of it like a doctor displaying the kind of bedside manner that's lauded in the medical field. Trust is not something that will automatically be given to a generative AI, Lowe told BI, or Business Insider. It has to be earned, which I find incredibly odd for AI to earn trust.
Yeah, I mean, it can't help but be sociopathic. It's not real. It doesn't have emotions. It can't relate to emotions.
Right, right. Conquest Planning, a Canadian startup, has developed financial planning software that uses an AI architecture known as a Blackboard system. Ken Lataki, who is its chief product officer, said the Blackboard stores essential information about tax rules, cash flow mechanics, retirement account structures, fiduciary rules, and more. Clients input their personal and financial data so the system can learn their preferences, parameters, and goals. Using this information, Lataki said, the system looks at all of their permutations and options that are available and then recommends a course of action. Advisors can toggle between a list of strategies to measure the effects of various decisions on the client's estate and goals, such as claiming retirement benefits at different ages. Mark McGrath, not the lead singer of that one group, a financial planner and portfolio manager at PWL Capital in Canada, said the software saved him time and provided clients with better financial plans than he could create manually. I've been doing this for a long time, I assure you. No financial planner is going into that level of depth and spending that amount of time on optimization, McGrath said. That means clients are not always provided with an optimal financial plan. He added, the analogy I've used in the past is that with Conquest, I'm driving a professionally tuned Ferrari while my competition is getting around on a pair of roller skates. Lataki estimated that Conquest software is used by 50 to 60% of the financial advisor market in Canada through partnerships with banks and independent advisory firms. The software is available in the U.S. on Pershing X's wealth management platform, Wove. While it's sophisticated, the software isn't a direct-to-consumer solution. Lowe and his associates hope to help make advisory or financial advisory AI accessible to people across the wealth spectrum, perhaps free of charge. Many financial advisors are eager to use generative AI as an assistant, but few are ready to replace them as of this point. Lowe said he believes that a world in which people rely on AI advisors rather than human advisors is within view, but he said a smooth transition will require retraining advisors for new careers, possibly with government support. He says, what I worry about, what I think policymakers need to really focus on, is if a large body of human employees become displaced in a very short period of time, that would cause tremendous social unrest and dislocation, Lowe said. So the speed of the displacement is something we need to pay attention to. So it sounds like it's a way far away away to take yeah. and replace humans with this type of software. And it's just, I don't think it's feasible to.
I don't think so either. If it is, I hope it's not in my lifetime.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Too weird.
Yeah. It just doesn't sound like it could be done. Let's move on, Jess. We have, I think before we get to these ghost stories, do you want to hear a parashare story?
We'd love to. I'm so excited that someone sent one.
Yeah. We have a parashare story here. Let me pull it up real quick. By the way, if you have a parashare story for us, it's real simple. You've got three ways to do it. You can email me tim@darknessradio.com the old fashioned way, like this person did. And you just send it in by email. Make sure you type it out for me. And that's real easy to do. Otherwise, you just go to our website, darknessradioshow.com, and you can leave a voice note. There's a little blue button on the right-hand side of the website. And you just leave your two-minute voice note. You have 2 minutes to do so. If you need more time, click on the blue button again. Rinse, repeat. You can keep doing that, and I'll stitch those two-minute voice notes together. And that is how we do it. And then the third way, if you have a studio just like we have, you can make your own theater of the mind. You mix up sound waves, you know, your own sound effects, your vocals, maybe some music, put it all together, and we will air it right here on the program after I screen it, of course. I'm not just going to throw it on willy-nilly. Although I could, and we could see what happens. It could be terrible. But, you know, you put it on or give it to us. We'll throw it on after we screen it. And we can air your full theater of the mind that way. So our theater of the mind, our parashare today, listen to me, theater of the mind. Again, COVID brain, Jess. COVID brain is a beautiful thing.
Doing great, Tim.
I'm doing great.
You are.
Thanks for the encouragement, Jess. I appreciate it. Craig Rhodes writes in with his parashare today. He says, this is long overdue. Listen to you while delivering baby chicks to farms in an 18-wheeler. I hear you asking us to send in our experiences, but by the time I make it home, I'm usually totally wiped from the heat and long hours. Last week, you sounded like you were pleading with us. I'm pleading with you to send it in. So I decided it's now or never. So attached, you'll find my best experiences. I know it's long, but each story seems somehow connected to the previous ones. Okay, so here's the deal, Craig. Maybe what I'll do, depending on how long they are, maybe I'll read one this week. How's that sound?
Oh, maybe one next week.
And one next week. Yeah. So we'll read one from Craig this week. He says, throughout my wife, blah, 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 again, COVID lip, I guess, this week too. Throughout my life, I've had so many of what I consider to be paranormal experiences. I'm going to attempt to put at least some of these down on digital paper. I was born in 1963, so most of my childhood was spent outdoors with friends, not in front of the TV. TV was boring back then. You only had three channels, and they did not play 24/7. I know, mind blown. How do we ever make it? The only things I knew of space was what we're taught in school. I had not been exposed to UFOs or aliens, so to me, that makes my experiences that much stranger for that time period of my youth. My first signs of possible aliens, UFOs, and abductions were in these childhood years. I often would have dreams that I was up in the air on a craft that was metallic-looking on the inside with curved walls. I was allowed in these dreams to see my house down below. Everything inside this craft seemed to be metallic and shiny like stainless steel. I didn't know what that was back then. Occasionally, I was taken in these dreams to underground chambers, but I don't remember much more than that. Whether in the sky or underground, I have no memory of ever seeing any beings or anything other than being allowed to see my home. Maybe this was to calm me down or something. Maybe these were just dreams. But where did that data come from to make these dreams? Okay, so here's his first encounter, and we'll do this one this week, and then we'll do others in the following weeks. So here's Craig's first encounter. My first encounter with an alien that I can remember was in my childhood. We lived in rural Chesapeake, Virginia. Our street, Kaufman Boulevard, had been cut through fields from Portsmouth Boulevard through to Dock Landing Road. Houses had been previously built in neighborhoods near Dock Landing Road, but the houses on our end of the street were new and only lined the street. Behind the houses of both sides of the road were very large fields. The other side of Portsmouth Boulevard was also endless fields. Note, today there is not a field in sight around there, only malls and shopping complexes everywhere that a field used to be. We lived in a simple three-bedroom, two-bath, 1,700-square-foot brick single-story house. My bedroom was straight down at the end of the hall. One night, my parents sent me to bed, and as I walked into the room, I glanced at the window in my room that was on the side of the house. What I saw was a very large gray head with giant black eyes staring back at me. I had never heard of aliens or grays at this time in my life, but this scared the crap out of me. I screamed and took off back down the hall to where my parents were. Yes, I know boys were brought up back then to be fearless and strong, but this truly scared me. I ran into the den and excitedly told them there was a giant head with giant eyes staring at me in my window. They rolled their eyes and said, "Go to bed!" I slowly creeped back to my room and nothing. Whatever I saw was gone. To be honest, after that I just kind of forgot about it. The ability of youth to be oblivious to things still amazes me. And that comes from Craig.
That is so creepy.
I don't know that I'd be able to sleep in that room, Craig. I'm going to be honest with you. After I saw something like that peeking in my window, either that or
I would have crawled in bed with mom and dad.
Yeah, that, and I would have shut those curtains and I would have never opened them again. They would never come back open. I tell you, brother, no way. Mm-mm. Not for a minute. Mm. Nope.
I'm excited to hear the next one next week, though.
Yeah, that's for sure. So we'll keep
we're
up
building up, and he's having more alien encounters.
Yep, he has more alien encounters after that. So we'll check in with Craig next week, and we'll continue to read his alien encounters. By the way, if you have a parashare, email it at tim@darknessradio.com. You can also send us a voice note, darknessradioshow.com. You click on that blue button. You got 2 minutes to do so. You need more time. Click on the blue button again. Let's get your experiences in here. All right. Okay. So we have a ghost story now. This story has to do with a man making a creepy discovery by a bedroom door after looking under piles of leaves. The story goes, are ghosts real? Do spirits exist? There are questions millions of people ask themselves every day as we search for proof of what happens after we die. Now, thousands of videos and pictures exist claiming to be proofs of ghosts, but none of them have so far convinced everybody. Let's see here. A man was left gobsmacked when he stumbled upon a gravestone mere feet from his bedroom in his New York home. While exploring the property, he unearthed the eerie marker hidden under a thick layer of leaves in his yard and shared the spine-tingling find on Reddit. He said, found a tombstone on the property of my new house I just bought. It is 7 feet from my bedroom door. It is in the main part of the yard, and it was covered in leaves, about 5 feet of leaves. The headstone bore the inscription, C. Stattmiller, 1872 to 1938. Further investigation revealed the stone predates his home, built in 1958. He later realized it's a stolen headstone. We figured it out. The homeowner delved into the history etched on the stone and identified C. Stattmiller as Carolyn Stattmiller, laid to rest at the First Methodist Church Cemetery in New York at age 65. The homeowner took to Reddit again to update his spooky saga. I'm calling the cemetery today to tell them that I have it, the tombstone, that is. To my surprise, I already sent the picture that I posted to grave.com. The nicest thing since I posted this, 6 anonymous donations of flowers have been placed on this website for Carolyn. Grave.com, where I found the cemetery. That doesn't make any sense. In a final twist, he discovered that attempts to contact the cemetery led nowhere as the phone line was disconnected. Undeterred, he resolved, I tried the cemetery and it's disconnected, so now I'm going to physically go there to see if there's a stone on the grave, and if there's not, I'm bringing this tombstone to that cemetery. Go figure. It was opened in 1938. Cemetery was. So why would that stone be in his yard then?
Whoever lived there before, sounds like they took it and put it there.
Bizarre.
Comment, that's weird.
Unless they moved the body to that cemetery, and that was an old tombstone they had, and they put a new stone in that cemetery, and they were keeping the old stone at that house. I don't know.
Which is weird.
You know what I mean? Commenting on his eerie discovery, one social media user quipped, congratulations, you are the new owner of a ghost. The poster replied, sharing further spooky antics. Pictures are always falling from the wall, but other than that, there are no noises or anything. Another suggested a financial silver lining, advising, in some states, if there's a body buried on your land, it makes your property tax exempt, as you are technically a graveyard. Worth looking into. Meanwhile, I guess it is. Meanwhile, a third urged respect for the unexpected find, saying simply, leave it, respect it, accept it. That sounds like a saying, like for an insurance company.
Yes, it's a tagline.
Yeah, leave it, respect it, accept it. I don't know, funny. Our next story. I told you about that nun. The nun's body that showed no sign of decomposition when it was exhumed. Okay, we're going to talk a little bit about a miracle now. Medical experts have been left scratching their heads over the mystery of how the late nun's body remained intact once it was exhumed. According to reports, Sister Wilhelmina Lancaster, a nun from rural Missouri who founded the Benedictines of Mary, Queen of Apostles, died at the age of 95 and was buried in a simple unsealed casket on the grounds of her order's monastery in Gower in mid-2019. To everyone's surprise, however, when she was later exhumed in 2023, why she would be exhumed after 4 years, I have no idea. For the purpose of moving her body inside the Abbey Church, her remains were found to be completely intact and with surprisingly little evidence of decomposition, despite spending 4 years buried in the ground.
That's wild.
So she wasn't completely sealed up. The grave was askew, or the casket was askew, and no decomposition. No embalming or other preservation methods had reportedly been used on her body prior to her burial. That's incredible as well. She should have decomposed right away.
Yeah, I think that happens pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And if it wasn't sealed all the way, wouldn't bugs have gotten in and started to just eat her up? Not to be gross, but...
No, but that's what should have happened. Bugs and worms and whatnot. Yeah. The discovery went on to generate quite a stir, with churchgoers hailing her incorruption, referring to the religious belief that a lack of decomposition is a reflection of holiness, as a miracle. Now, long after she was exhumed, a team of medical experts was commissioned to examine Sister Wilhelmina's body and investigate what could account for her unusual state of remains. In their final report, the team confirmed that the body had not decomposed as expected, even though the lining of her casket itself had rotted away. Even her clothing seemed to be remarkably intact.
That's crazy. So her casket lining was rotting, but her clothes and her body were just not
intact.
That's insane.
Yeah. The condition of her body is highly atypical for the interval of nearly 4 years since her death, especially given the environmental conditions and the findings and associated objects, they wrote. Despite their best efforts, the medical experts were unable to find any explanation for this. As things stand, the case remains a complete mystery, and Sister Wilhelmina, whose body has been on display in a glass shrine inside the abbey, continues to attract visitors from far and wide.
I say they should make that woman a saint.
But does lack of decomposition make one a saint?
I feel like you have to get some sort of a prize for that. And what else is there when you're dead? Sainthood.
A prize? She didn't dig into a box of Cracker Jacks, Jess.
I mean, I just know when I die, if I'm not cremated, which is why I'm totally going to be cremated, and they exhume my body, I would be soup. I will be corpse soup. I will be half rotted. There will be water in with me. I will be disgusting. And this woman like comes out and she looks great.
So if you go through the flames and you don't burn, you want to be canonized?
Yeah, something.
You want to be like St. Jessica, the Human Torch? Is that what you want
to
be?
Yes, please. Yep. Yes.
Okay.
It's all I ask for, Tim.
You got it.
I don't think it's too much.
You got it, kid. It's all yours. You got it. Our next story has to do with the interesting idea that we're being visited by intelligent entities from a higher dimension, which are probably preserving nuns' bodies. I'm just saying.
I think you're right.
Yeah, yeah. They're coming down with cold cream. That's what it is. I'm always convinced it was my grandma's oil of Olay cold cream that kept her looking so young.
Yep.
Yep. That's what it is. That's all it is. Our window on the world is limited by our human senses, so could something be lurking beyond our perception? This article was written by T.K. Randall. So keep in mind, this isn't my idea. It's T.K. Randall's idea. So don't write me. I don't want to hear
it. We're not going to blame you.
Thank you. It starts off by saying, is it difficult to imagine the idea of higher dimensions, especially given that our own perception of reality is based mainly on what we see, hear, smell, taste, or touch? To consider what might lie beyond our physical reality, imagine a world that is entirely two-dimensional, a place inhabited by flat shapes like squares and triangles that have no physical depth. How would these two-dimensional entities perceive a visitor from the third dimension? If we shifted things up to our own three-dimensional reality, how would we perceive a visitor from a higher dimensional plane of existence than our own? How would we even be aware of them? Over the years, it's been speculated that higher dimensions could explain various phenomena ranging from paranormal activity to encounters with intelligent alien entities. It would certainly explain why such phenomena are so difficult to record or reproduce. The existence of higher dimensions isn't just a science fiction concept either. Such dimensions are an integral part of physics and mathematics and are even required for some theories, such as string theory, to work at all. Today, it is thought that the universe may have started out with as many as 11 dimensions. The idea, then, that intelligent entities might inhabit some of these higher dimensions and are capable of even temporarily visiting and interacting with our own is certainly not without some merit. Actually detecting or even communicating with such beings, if they exist at all, however, represents a whole other set of challenges. So they just leave it open-ended, Jess. What do you think?
That's kind of anticlimactic.
It is, yeah. What do you think? Do you think it's a thing? Do you think that intelligences from other dimensions are coming over here?
I do. I tend to think that's a plausible theory that I can buy into.
Yeah.
How about you?
Potentially. Yeah. Yeah, why not?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of think that a lot of the things that we encounter might be interdimensional, interacting with us. I mean, Bigfoot, I think, could be an interdimensional type of being because, you know, you'll see him, people will witness him, and then footprints just end, right? Like he disappeared into another dimension.
Yeah, that's a good possibility. I think the other thing you see sometimes, I think maybe some of the UFO activity might be an interdimensional
thing. Yeah, I was just going to say that. I really do. I kind of think aliens might be more interdimensional than interplanetary. But
Yeah. I think some of that might be. I don't buy the next story has to do with a time traveler. I think a lot of the TikTok time traveler stuff, I think it's just people looking for attention. But I don't know. It might be. Who's to say? It might be somebody from another dimension who's...
It could be. I think we have like created a sickness of people looking for attention though. So
I think so.
With social media.
Yeah. Yeah. I think some people are craving such attention that they'll make stuff up and pop online.
Yeah.
We've created kind of a sick society.
We have. It's crazy.
Yeah.
But let's hear about this crazy one.
All right. Oh, wow. Just kind of jumped the shark on that deal, huh? This self-professed time traveler offers predictions of the future. This guy came out on Monday and said, well, let's put it this way. A popular social media user has been making various predictions about what will come to pass in the near future. We've heard from a few self-professed time travelers over the years, a trend which gained prominence in the early 2000s when a man named John Teeter, you'll remember him from the old Art Bell shows, started to frequent online message boards claiming to be a soldier from the year 2036 who had gone back in time to warn humanity. While Teeter later was exposed as a hoax, there have been numerous copycats in the years since, usually with the alleged time traveler making similar claims about future calamities. One of the latest examples is at the Time Traveler 2582, a user on TikTok whose future predictions have seen him rack up over 132,000 followers. This otherwise anonymous individual maintains that they are from the year 2582. According to their posts, on September 23rd of this year, a large boat will go missing in the Bermuda Triangle for a period of 6 months. When it finally reappears, the people on board will allegedly report that, for them, only a single day had passed. Then from December 12, 2025, pieces of antimatter meteorite will fall through the Earth's atmosphere and will be sold for the price of $64.5 trillion per gram.
Wow, I hope I find some.
Yeah, me too, right? Yeah, we'll both get a hold of some of that. We'll be rich beyond demand. Things that will reach ahead on January 1st of 2026 when, according to the Time Traveler's posts, the Great Reset happens, making a huge change for humanity. I wonder what the Great Reset is.
I hope it's a change for the better.
Yeah. Perhaps weirdest of all is a prediction for August 27th, 2024, which has already happened.
All right. What did he predict?
A mysterious gate is discovered in a cave, but it is closed and it will be opened. It will lead to an alternative universe with a new form of life discovered. Some of it will be brought back to Earth.
Hmm.
Do you remember hearing anything about that?
Maybe it happened and they're just not telling us.
I don't know. That would have been,
think no.
That would have been last Tuesday. Presumably, then, we won't have long to find out whether or not at the Time Traveler 2582 is the real deal.
Yeah, I think probably not.
I think we got...
We've just given him a platform to share his mental illness with us all.
Yep, I think we have strike one already. Strike one already is in the books. Let's see here. How many stories do we have left here? I think we can possibly... You know what? I'm going to cut one of these. I think. Let me see. How long is this one? Well, maybe I can get all of them in. Let's try and get all of them in. A German startup company is freezing deceased bodies for a bizarre future plan. You ready for this?
Yes.
Tomorrow Bio is Europe's first cryopreservation startup, and it freezes bodies in liquid nitrogen, aiming to revive them in the future. German-based startup Tomorrow Bio launched an innovative business of freezing humans and pets to revive them in the future when technology advances. The company, the first of its kind in Europe, had already attracted 650 customers. They had frozen five pets and six humans, with each cryopreservation costing 170,000 pounds. Preserving just the brain had a lower cost of 63,000 pounds. Fernando Acevedo Pinheiro, who founded the company in 2020, told the Daily Mail, "Personally, I believe that in my lifetime, I was 40 years old, we might witness safe cryopreservation and reanimation of complex organisms," he added. "Personally, I believe that within my lifetime, I was 40 years old, we might witness the safe cryopreservation and reanimation of complex organisms." Why it printed it twice, I don't know. Twice is nice. News.com, KNEWZ.com, explored that the most important step was to start the preservation process as soon as the death occurred to prevent natural decomposition. Once a person was legally declared dead, the company sent its field staff to collect the body. The body was placed in ice baths in specialized ambulances, and oxygen was used to reduce the impact of the decomposition process. The body was then transferred to Tomorrow Bio's storage facility in Switzerland. Before the customer's body reached the storage facility, the temperature was brought down to 112 degrees Fahrenheit. Well, that's chilly. To achieve this without damaging the tissues, body fluids were drained and replaced with medical-grade antifreeze. Brr. This doesn't sound good.
Nope.
Once the body reached the main storage facility, it was further cooled from 112 degrees Fahrenheit minus to minus 320 degrees Fahrenheit, which took about 10 days to complete. Afterwards, the body transferred to a steel container filled with liquid nitrogen. Boy, I can see it being dropped and just shattered. The customer's body, I know, right? The customer's body was then stored in the container for hundreds of years, waiting for new technology to enable revival. If revival occurred sooner and the customer's payments were still valid, the company promised to return any remaining money.
What are they going to do with these bodies? Like, this is just so weird.
The company attracted customers from Germany, France, and the United Kingdom, and planned to expand to the United States by 2025. Besides freezing human bodies, the service was also used to preserve beloved pets. Most existing customers were relatively young, with an average age of 36. The company was on a long-term mission and had no plans to be sold, as customers were trusting it for centuries. The company's CEO, Dr. Emil Kenzioria, I believe it is, told TechEU, "The company will never be sold, so all our investors need to be okay with this. They receive dividends, but not sales profits. It was a long-term mission." He highlighted the growing popularity of the business, saying, "If you are cremated, you have zero chance of revival. But if you're cryopreserved, the chance is more than zero." Cryogenics was a fascinating field, and it already captured the attention of consumers through fiction films. Despite the uncertainty of the future, people were willing to invest in the hope of being revived and living again. It sounds like maybe that company might have went under. Meanwhile, DARPA's working on a way to put humans into suspended animation. They're introducing and inducing hypersleep, and it could help patients with critical injuries or illnesses, among other potential uses. You've seen in science fiction, technology is capable of putting a person into suspended animation. Well, in the real world, we have yet to come up with a way to achieve it. But it hasn't stopped DARPA, which is the Defense Advanced Research Project Agency, from having a good go at it. Together with researchers from Harvard, the agency is looking to find a way to pause the clock, so to speak, in particular for patients suffering from time-critical injuries or illnesses. If they could be placed into suspended animation or hypersleep, it would give doctors more time to treat them or enable injured soldiers in the battlefield to survive until help arrives. They say cooling a patient's body down to slow its metabolic processes has long been used in medical settings to reduce injuries and long-term problems from severe conditions, but it can only currently be done in a well-resourced hospital. Achieving a similar state of biostasis with an easily administered drug like DMP could potentially save millions of lives a year, according to them. The new research aims to use the Alzheimer's drug DNP or danazpazel, I believe, to induce this effect on demand outside of a hospital setting, but there's still a lot of work to be done. Interestingly, clinical doses of DNP in patients suffering from Alzheimer's disease have been associated with drowsiness and a reduced heart rate, symptoms that are torpor-like, said lead study author Maria Plaza Olivier. However, this is the first study to our knowledge that focuses on leveraging those effects as a main clinical response and not as side effects. So there you go. That's that story there. All right. We told you about the MH370 mystery and a possible new solution as to what happened to that plane. An Australian researcher believes he knows what happened to the plane and why nobody has found the wreckage. The plane had been heading to Beijing Capital International Airport in China. But after a series of unexplained direction changes and the seemingly deliberate disabling of its transponder, the aircraft, along with all its passengers and crew, disappeared without a trace, never to be seen again. What followed was one of the most extensive search and rescue operations the world had ever seen, with teams from multiple countries scouring vast areas of open ocean for any sign of the plane's wreckage. As things stand, there's still no definitive explanation for what happened. Now, though, Australian researcher Vincent Lin has put forward a new theory that could explain both what happened to the plane and why nobody has ever been able to find it. The disappearance of MH370, he argues, is the result of a mastermind pilot almost executing an incredible perfect disappearance in the southern Indian Ocean. More specifically, he believes the pilot, 53-year-old Zahari Ahmad Shah, deliberately crashed the plane in a very specific part of the ocean where he knew it would never be found. The particular location, a 20,000-foot hole in the seafloor surrounded by high ridges, could in fact be the number one place to look for signs of the plane's wreckage. This isn't the first time that it's been suggested that the pilot crashed the airliner on purpose, although it remains a mystery as to why he would have wanted to do this. Whether the sea hole will be searched or not is up to officials and search companies, but as far as the science is concerned, we know why the previous searches failed, and likewise, science unmistakably points to where MH370 lies, Lin wrote. So there you go. Hole in the seafloor. And finally, Jess, our final story of the day. I believe dolphins are gray aliens, and we found the horniest one yet. And he's attacking swimmers in Japan. This is our final story of the day, if you're ready for it.
I'm ready.
A spate of dolphin attacks on swimmers in Japan's Fukui Prefecture is being blamed on one bottlenose dolphin whose researchers believe may be particularly lonely, having been separated from a pod. According to NBC News, Japanese news service NHK reported last week that a man had been bitten on both hands by a dolphin while swimming at a beach in the city of Suraga. The man was the 18th person to be bitten by a dolphin in the area since July 21st. Since 2022, more than 45 people have been injured in the area. Based on unique fin markings captured on film and in video, it is believed that many of the incidents are linked to a single male bottlenose dolphin. Because bottlenose dolphins are generally highly social animals that live together in pods, and this dolphin has been spotted swimming alone, marine researchers say that dolphins' unusual behavior may be caused by loneliness and sexual frustration after being isolated from a pod. Tadamichi Morisaka, who is a dolphin ecologist at Mie University in Sioux, Japan, told Nature.com that playful biting is a common behavior amongst male bottlenose dolphins, and I'm just saying maybe some aliens, I don't know, who almost always live in pairs and groups. This includes behaviors like chasing each other and rubbing the other dolphin with their pectoral fins, which is thought to signal fondness and even sexual behaviors, such as pressing their penises against each other, Morisaka said. Adding that gentle biting is one of those pro-social behaviors, so the dolphin in Fukui acting like he's playing with a male pairmate, but with humans instead. James Cook University researcher Pudu Mostika said that dolphins can also become aggressive when exhibiting mating behaviors and may misinterpret human interactions. It remains unclear, though, why this dolphin in particular has become isolated from its companions. In response to the increasing attacks on swimmers, officials have increased lifeguard patrols in the area and reduced swimming hours to try and reduce human interaction with the lonely marine mammal.
Poor guy.
Horny dolphins.
He's just lonely.
That he is. That he is. And with that, that's supernatural news for another week. And with that, Jess, we talk once again about, I was going to say other horny travelers, but I don't know that I should say that. No. That's not what happens on your trips for Ghost Stories, Inc.
I don't think so, no, anyway.
We have good, respectable people that go to the Ghost Stories, Inc. Trips. You have two trips coming up to the Palmer, and you have another one, you said, a day trip.
Yeah. We have just a single evening. We have two nights only that'll be in St. Paul at the Manor, which is a really cool location, really historic home with kind of a sad, tragic history to it and a little mystery involved, right before Halloween, the 25th and 26th. So it'd be like campfire stories, ghost stories around the campfire, s'mores, hot cocoa, and then a paranormal investigation. So just kind of a fun night. It's totally kid friendly. I always say like 12 and up because I don't want, you know, really young children to get super scared. But I actually booked this place out for my son's birthday party, for his 12th birthday, actually. So it's a cool place. I recommend it if you have a kid who's interested in that sort of thing.
Right on. There you go. All right. So we'll have links in the description of this program, both for the trips and for Jessica's two books that are on pre-sale right now. Be sure to pick up those books. We'll have Jessica and her writing partner back for those books when they go on sale. So we'll talk about those books as well. Tomorrow on the big program, it is Ursula Bielski, a good friend of ours. She has a brand new book out there called The Devil in Dreamland, Catholic Faith, UFOs, the Occult, and the End of the Supernatural.
Ooh, it sounds so good.
Yeah. So Ursula will be with us tomorrow. You may remember Ursula as the organizer of the Chicago Paracon. Boy, she's got an interesting tale. That's all I can say. This book is very interesting. I'm not even going to tease you about what it's about, but let's just say it is a tale. And we're going to talk to Ursula about that book tomorrow on the big program. So there you go. More follow tomorrow, folks. We're going to leave you today on that note. For Jessica Freeberg, I'm Tim Dennis. Thank you so much for listening today and watching Supernatural News and Perisher. Tomorrow, Ursula Bielski on the big program. Thank you for tuning in to the best in paranormal podcasting. This is Darkness Radio.
Big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Dutch Boy's DuraFighter is an interior paint and primer in one with a top lasting formula. It provides great scrub resistance and durability with remarkable hide and a smooth finish. Say big on Dutch Boy's DuraFighter paint at Menards and start your next project today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week.
Save big money at
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Dutch Boy's DuraFighter is an interior paint and primer in one with a top lasting formula. It provides great scrub resistance and durability with remarkable hide and a smooth finish. Save big on Dutch Boy's DuraFighter paint at Menards and start your next project today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week.
Save big money at Menards.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Dutch Boy's DuraFighter is an interior paint and primer in one with a tough-lasting formula. It provides great scrub resistance and durability with remarkable hide and a smooth finish. Save big on Dutch Boy's DuraFighter paint at Menards and start your next project today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week.
Save big money at
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care. Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care. Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care. Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care. Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.